All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. It's the Week 15 edition of the show. I am Bobby Fenton, and the Bucks win again, and we move on again for the first time in a while, now solo first place in the NFC South, a game ahead of the Atlanta Falcons. With them holding the tiebreaker, that's thanks to the Bucks' 28-13 win in Tampa over the weekend, in addition to the Falcons losing up in Minnesota. And so here we are. And the wins at this point, you know, I don't want to take the joy out of it. I mean, this is supposed to be fun, especially in football where you only get one game a week. But week by week goes by, Bucks win against a bad team. You say, okay, good, that's great. That's what you're supposed to do. Move on to the next one. It's just kind of a workmanlike feeling right now around the Buccaneers because of the hole they got themselves in before the bye and the way the schedule set up after, where we knew they were going to be playing a lot of substandard teams and we just expect them to go out and win. But let me tell you something. It's hard. Just to win one game is hard. So I don't want to lose the appreciation of that. And you can see how hard it is because even though the Bucs won on the scoreboard by two scores, by 15 points, it was actually a lot closer than that, especially earlier in the game when the Bucks got off to a very good start, a 14-0 lead quickly in the first quarter, scoring on both of their opening drives. Then the offense shut it down pretty much all the way until middle of the fourth quarter, and it was a dogfight, make no mistake, and anybody who watched the game knows that. But the Bucks do get the win over a Raiders team that is obviously not having the best year and struggling and just kind of playing out the string. But they're still, all these guys, all these teams are still fighting. Nobody's going to roll over for anybody. None of this stuff is going to be easy. And of course, the Chargers being an 8-5 team, certainly it won't be easy this weekend when the Bucks go out there on the West Coast. We'll talk about that game a little bit in a while. Just looking back at the Raiders game before we get into that. And first of all, if you want to get a hold of me, as always, I love hearing from you guys. If you want to email me directly, you can always do that. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. 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 I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on Twitter. All of them. All the same. BobbyGameDay. And you actually can find me on Facebook, too. So there's lots of ways to get a hold of me if you got a contributor, want to say anything to the show or on the show. As far as this win over the Raiders, okay, so if you go to Sunday, and I went to the game, this first game I've been to since the Falcons game in the throwback uniforms. Actually had a friend. This is how travel baseball goes. My son plays travel baseball. All of his friends do. A lot of them on the same team, but some on other teams, and I'm friends with the dads. So one of the dads has season tickets at the 50-yard line. Thanks, Darren, if you're out there listening. And so my kid had a travel game in the morning. His does, too. On Sundays is when they do the single elimination bracket. So you can go out there, and you could play 3-4 games in a day if you keep winning, or you could lose your first game, and you're done by 11 in the morning or a little bit later. So my kid lost his first game, and his kid won. And he's like, hey, man, my tickets are going to go to waste. You want them? And I was like, yeah, we lost. It was like 11:45 or even later. I'm in St. Pete. We just lost a game. I looked at my son, I'm like, hey, man, you want to just haul ass home, get changed real quick, and go to the stadium? Sure, let's do it. Why not? Tickets are there. Don't waste them. So we actually ended up getting to the game late in the first quarter because we were just hurrying so much. So I had the game on the radio listening to Gene Deckerhoff and Dave Moore and TJ Reeves in the car, then got home and threw some clothes on, headed straight back out to RJS, got parked, got in there. 14-0 when we got there, and then, of course, nothing happened. Like, it was a very boring game, and it was a very just ho-hum day. Bucks didn't play that great offensively, for sure. A lot of turnovers with Baker Mayfield turning it over a few times, and yet the defense actually did do a good job, and you'd expect that against a struggling Raiders team. But they went out there and took care of business, as they, for the most part, have been against these bad teams. The Bucks actually, over the past 3 weeks now, are number one in scoring allowed, scoring defense, 14.3 points per game. That's number one in the NFL since the bye. Of course, that's against who? The Giants, the Panthers, the Raiders. But whatever. You know, they had to play some tough ones before, so they deserve to have some easier ones now. Their scoring offense in that same time is number nine in the NFL at 28 points per game, which is exactly what they scored on Sunday. So not that bad. But defense turned it up a little bit, got a few turnovers of their own. It was nice to see the Bucs get an interception for the first time since week six. And it looked like they had a couple more that both got overturned after the fact on the Sky ref, which was the right call both times. That's fine. But either way, they did a good job, got good pressure on the quarterback. Secondary, as banged up as they are, made some plays. And then offensively, even though it wasn't a great day. Oh, and let me say this about the defense, too, before I get to the offense. To be fair, you know, so they're playing bad opponents. Well, the Raiders, 13 points, that's the fewest they've scored since week one. So even as a bad team, all the other teams they've played, they've been able to score more than 13 points against them. Bucks held them to their lowest point total of the year. And so that deserves to be said. And the offense, even though a lot of things weren't great and the turnovers still have to be fixed, it's been an issue. And again, they've been getting away with it because of the quality of competition, but it's been an issue since the bye, and it ain't going to work against the Chargers, and it certainly ain't going to work if they want to go, you know, wherever they want to be going. If they get there, it ain't going to work then. So, and Baker Mayfield will be the first one to tell you that. But they did do really well on third down. The Bucs offense, in fact, third and long even, they had three first downs on third and eight or longer. One of those was on third and 11. And just to give you a little frame of reference, I know we're getting kind of deep inside the numbers here. Three first downs of that distance and one of third and 11. In 2022, with Tom Brady as the quarterback, okay, the Bucs were 0 for 39 on third down and 11 yards or more, okay? And they got one this weekend and a couple more that were close to that. And I know that that year, if you remember 2022, that was the final year of Brady when the Bucs were just hanging on. They eked out a bad division, got beat by Dallas on Monday night in the wild card round. But that team struggled mightily on third downs of any distance. Certainly third and 11 or more was not a great spot for them. And yet, you know, this weekend they did that. But here's the thing about the Bucs offense beyond just third down conversions in general. The Bucs offense has been getting lots of first downs on first down or on second down. So they've been staying out of third downs. In fact, the Bucs offense, if you look at their rate of getting a first down on first down, so it's first and 10, let's get another one. Let's not even get deep into the series. They've done that 26% of the time, a first down on first down this year, which is second in all of the NFL. Just 1 year ago, that rate was 16%, and it was last in the NFL. Now, being an explosive offense, being able to hit downfield certainly helps there. But what's the biggest reason they've gotten so much better at getting first downs early in the down set? It's the running game. I mean, the Bucs run it about 52, 53% of the time on first down. Not markedly different than last year. They're within one percentage point, like I think three snaps, if you extrapolate it over the whole season, of their rate of running it on first down. So it's not like they're doing it more or less. But they're just getting lots of freaking yards now when they do it. And the transformation of the run game, I'll tell you this right now. First of all, so many people deserve credit because when you think of the running game, what do you think of? Well, the running backs. And yeah, obviously they've been great. Rashad White, Bucky Irving, Sean Tucker, all three of them have been good. But beyond that, the offensive line's been really good too. And not just guys like Wirfs and Yedeke, but even Bredesen in run blocking and Graham Barton. Cody Mauch was awesome. He was the highest, whatever you think about PFF, he was the highest rated Buccaneer in PFF for this past weekend against the Raiders. Offensive line's been phenomenal, but even beyond the running backs and the offensive line, it's scheme. Liam Cohen, the running game is different. Running is not just handing the ball off. There's all these different things, and the running game is different now, so you combine that with the way the offensive line is played. You combine that with what Bucky Irving's been able to do with Rashad White, with Sean Tucker, and you got a hell of a running game now. And listen, I've always said on this show, running the ball matters, and if I hand the ball to somebody, I'd rather get 7 yards than get four or three, of course, but I've always said don't get too hung up on the running game. You know, it's not – passing is where it's at. Passing – and it is. I mean, passing are the highest efficiency plays. Chunk plays are what produce points. But when you can rely on your running game to get you in good down and distance situations, either third and shorter, in this case, the Bucs, they face fewer third downs overall. They have actually faced – of any distance, 10% fewer third downs this year than last year. And even when they do have third down, on third down this year, their average yardage needed to gain is third and 7.3. They've hit on 49% of them. That's second only to KC. Last year wasn't that different. It was third and 7.0, and they hit on 43% of those. Excuse me. So it's not even really that they're getting more third and shorts. I misspoke. It's that they're just fewer third downs altogether because they're doing better on first and second down. And a lot of that is a big testament to the running game. And so the Bucs got some pickups in the passing game on third and long, but they also have been able to stay out of those situations altogether. Sterling Shepard, I want to say more about him because he's been really, really good. Nobody's saying anybody is Chris Godwin, but when you got Mike Evans out there and Sterling Shepard is in the slot getting things done, and not just in the slot, but I mean he's done a really good job running routes. Like if you look at his route running and coming out of his breaks and the explosiveness, he looks really, really good. Had a couple of those long third down catches on Sunday. He's done a great job. So guys like that have to step up. Cade Otton had a big chunk play, I remember. And the offense did enough, and then things got going. Oh, Jalen McMillan, can't forget Jalen McMillan, a couple touchdowns, including the one that iced it late in the game. So, you know, things are getting better offensively, although offensively they've been kind of in a little bit of the doldrums lately. And we'll see what they do, how they respond when they go out to San Diego this weekend. But the Bucs had 420 yards of offense despite not really lighting it up, or didn't feel like they lit it up. And again, you say, oh, it's a bad team. That's the second most of any team that's had against the Raiders this year. So the Bucs did some things other teams have not been able to do. Atmosphere at the, well, Chris Thomas used to call it the SITS, Community Investment Tax Stadium. I know the Joes sometimes refer to it as the Den of Depression, or at least they did back during the lost decade, as they call it, in the 2010s. And even now that the Bucs are doing a lot better, I mean, Sunday, 1 o'clock, it wasn't hot. It's the nice time of year. Weather was actually kind of nice, although it was really, really bright. And I was sitting on the west side, so if you're on the west side, you get in the shade by like late second quarter, especially this time of year, so it wasn't too bad. But it was a subdued atmosphere, let's put it that way. The stadium wasn't, you know, there's different ways of a stadium not being full. Like there's stadiums that clearly like didn't sell that many tickets where there's huge open sections of empty seats. But then there's ones like this weekend where it feels like it's sold out. Like every corner of the stadium had people. So there was no like sections that just clearly weren't sold. But there were lots of empty seats that felt like just no-shows. Like every row had a few people not there. And it was, you know, like, so it wasn't like the entire upper corners were empty. There were people even in the furthest away and highest in the corner seats. But then there were also people missing from seats in the lower level, people missing from seats in the club level, people missing from seats in the upper level. And it wasn't loud. It wasn't a tough place to go into. Everybody was just kind of eh. And, you know, I wish it wasn't like that. I wish we were a little more hardcore. We are pretty hardcore when you get the chips all the way down. And I think much like the team right now, everybody's just kind of thinking, okay, we'll just keep beating these bad teams and let's get to the good stuff, you know. But, hey, again, you only get 17 of them. Like, it's the beauty of football. And so I don't want to like fast forward through anything just because it's a bad team. I don't want to ever take a win for granted. What's beautiful about football, and I told my flag football kids this. I coach the flag football team, my son's team, in the Under Armour, Under the Lights League over there at Skyway on Friday nights. And we won our first game this past Friday. And everybody's hooting. Now, the kids were so happy. Like, and I was thinking, like, you know what? Yeah, they should be. Like, we play baseball. Especially if you play travel, you play 40, 50, all these games. The games just run together. You don't get excited about a win. You win a game, it's like, okay, go get go take a whiz, have an orange slice. We got to play two more games today. But the reason football is special is because just winning a football game is special. Like in the flag football league, we only play 7 or 8. NFL, you only play 17. College, you play less than that. It's not like hockey or basketball where there's 80-some-odd games before the playoffs or like baseball, where it feels like there's a couple hundred. It's like 162 in the regular season, and if you make the playoff, I mean, you know, just winning any football game is a big deal, and that's what I like about it. Like, you don't see in other sports the coach stand in the middle of the locker room with 50 guys around him hooting and hollering, you know, all whooping it up and handing out game balls and everybody going nuts, but every regular season win in the NFL has that. Like, it's a big deal. It's a big deal to win a football game, which is part of the allure of the sport. So the crowd didn't really feel that into it. And I had a good time. You know, I'm at the age now, I used to go to every single game. Like, I went to every single game, including preseason at Raymond James Stadium, and actually bleeding back into the Sombrero at Tampa Stadium, from 1996, when Dungy took over, Actually, it was 95, a few of the back-end games there. I went to a couple of those, then I did not miss another single game until like 2008. And I remember the first time I missed a game at Raymond James Stadium ever. It was when the Rays were playing the Red Sox in the Game 7 of the ALCS, if you remember that. And it was a Sunday night Bucks game, and that game was also on a Sunday night, and I went to the Rays Game 7 instead. It was the first time I ever missed a game at RJS. And now that I'm older, I'm still as big of a Buck fan as I've ever been, but I'm not as gung-ho about going in person. And now that I have kids, it's circling back because they want to go, so I take them. And I took my daughter on Sunday, and you know, we were there, and it was a good time. But yeah, just kind of didn't have the zip, man. And now the Bucks go on the road. They've got two home games to end it during the holiday season here after they get back from this two-game. They got at the Chargers this weekend, at Dallas next Sunday. So hopefully we can get a little more juice for those last couple of home games. And hopefully we can have another home playoff game. That's what the Bucks will get if they can hold on to this one-game lead in the NFC South. And like Todd Bowles said, it's one thing to get into first place, which they've been able to claw their way back into. It's entirely another to stay in first place. Falcons play on Monday night, hosting the Raiders, one of two Monday night games. I'll tell you this. I mean, we've been very fortunate, the Falcons. They've had a tougher schedule, but they've also, you know, not played well, and they've lost these games. They're on a big losing streak right now. Kirk Cousins has not been good. Outside of playing the Buccaneers, he hasn't really been good all year, but he's got 8 picks and no touchdowns during this recent losing streak Atlanta's having. I'll tell you this right now, and I hope I'm wrong. I would be stunned, especially with Atlanta coming off of that tough loss in Minnesota. I would be stunned if Atlanta does not beat the Raiders on Monday night. So I would assume, okay, that Atlanta's going to get their win, and if the Bucs don't, then we're right back into a tie for first place with them having the tiebreaker. But I mean, seriously, like, I'd be really, really shocked. In fact, if you're into the betting angle of it, and the Falcons, what are they favored? They're only favored by 4, but this is just betting. This is not straight up. This is against the spread. The Falcons on Monday night apply to an 81-33-1 bounce-back situation against the spread now. And that's based on their current losing streak. While on top of that, the Raiders apply to an 11-44 Monday night. Actually, the game's in Las Vegas, not Atlanta. I misspoke a minute ago. The Raiders apply to a situation that is 11-44 against the spread all time. Basically, bad teams are never good at home on Monday night, or very rarely play well at home on Monday night. So a lot of angles and situations that seem to be pointing toward Atlanta win Monday. I'd love if the Raiders could bounce back and beat them. Either way, if it's Desmond Ridder or Aiden McConnell, we saw them both on Sunday here. I don't think there's that much of a difference between them. But yeah, hey, let's hope the Falcons keep imploding. I just wouldn't count on it. So the Bucs are going to have to keep at it and keep at it and keep at it because there is no room to breathe, okay? And I think with 4 games left, I don't think Atlanta's going to win all 4 of them. So I would assume the Bucs need to go 3-1 in the final 4 to feel comfortable. If they do that, they should win the South. And they also have wild card hopes, too, that could, even if they don't win the South, you know, they're in a decent spot with tiebreakers in the wild card race if they can catch up to the Commanders. And they got the Rams right there with them as well, although the Rams play tonight. We'll see. Anyway, point is, you can't let off the gas pedal here. It feels good to be in first, but I guarantee you that Atlanta's going to be right up their rear end the whole time. So, going out to Los Angeles here. West Coast trip. All time, I was looking at this just because I love Buccaneer history. I'm not sure it matters. This is the whole franchise, not just this version of the team. All time, the Bucs are just 10-32 on the West Coast. And I'm classifying West Coast as any of the California teams, the Raiders, the Chargers, the Rams, and only Rams when they played in L.A., not St. Louis. And then also the one game that the Bucs have played at Las Vegas, I counted that. I didn't count Arizona, I didn't count Denver, or any of those. Oh, and Seattle, I'm counting Seattle as well. So the Bucks all time, in the Pacific time zone, West Coast, 10-32. Now, a lot of that is from the 70s and 80s and 90s when the Bucks were just terrible, and they lost. They had that same record against pretty much anybody, so it wasn't just a West Coast thing. But if you look at their records in these different, like for example, they're 3-14 all time at San Francisco. Like 7 or 8 of those are all just games from when the Bucs had no chance of beating anybody and Joe Montana and all that stuff, you know. But as far as specifically going out to L.A., Bucks are 1-5 when they play at the Rams, and they're 2-3 when they play at San Diego. And again, they haven't played the Chargers yet as the LA Chargers on the road. They played the Chargers in 2020 here. They have not played the LA Chargers at SoFi. Bucks have only played one game at SoFi. It was a loss to the Rams a few years ago when they were wearing their all pewter uniforms. So anyway, whatever that's worth, going out west. I like the 4-25 start at least. I mean, that part is good. And I'm always saying I want to get together with my friends for games, and my buddies kind of tick me off sometimes, honestly, because, you know, because got kids now, everybody's married, and everybody's got all their, and they, you try and get them over for a Sunday night or Monday night game, they're like, dude, I can only stay till halftime, I have to get home. I'm like, well, what are you, you know, your wife can't put the kids to bed one night. I mean, it's cool that as husbands, they're all helping out, which they should. I'm not saying, oh, let the women do all the work. I don't mean that. But it's like, my God, can we sit down and watch a football game together? We used to do it every week. Now we barely all do it. So maybe they can handle a 4:25 game. Maybe I can get people to come over to my house for that. Since, you know, next week with Dallas, it may be too late. And hey, at least they're going to keep that game on Sunday night, because I told you on the show a few weeks ago, right, that I was going to pretty much anticipating that they'd flex us out of Sunday night football with Dallas. And a friend of mine even said, he's like, hey, I know that matchup probably isn't great, but it's still the Cowboys. Jerry Jones pulls a lot of sway. He's not going to take kindly to the league flexing him out. And he was right. They didn't do it. And they would have to do it by now. They haven't done it. So the Bucks are staying in primetime next weekend when they play the Cowboys. And I know the Cowboys just came off the Monday night primetime game, which they also weren't flexed out of. But that was more because it was that Simpsons thing. Did anybody watch that Simpsons thing on the alternate channel or whatever? I'm a huge Simpsons guy, like one of my favorite shows of all time. Growing up, watched it every week, and even I didn't watch the Simpsons broadcast for more than a couple minutes. I just wanted to see it. And then I went back to the Manning cast. But anyway, that'll be next week. Bucks have 2 weeks in a row where they're not playing at 1 p.m., and so 4:25 for this one on Fox. Chargers have lost 2 of 3. Bucks obviously coming in on the three-game winning streak, even losing 2 of 3. Chargers are 8-5. This is an offense that's in the bottom half of the NFL in most metrics, even though Justin Herbert himself obviously isn't a bad quarterback. He's dealing with an ankle thing. I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think he'll play, but right now there's still supposedly some questions around the condition of his ankle. Taylor Heinicke, who the Bucks faced in the playoffs in the opening round of the wild card in 2020 when they went to the Super Bowl, he's the backup, although I think Herbert will play. He played against the Chiefs and got the ankle tweaked in that game. Their offense didn't do much of anything until the second half, where they got a couple late touchdowns and took the lead. Then, of course, you probably saw the Chiefs doink the game-winning field goal off the upright, but have it still go through. That's the kind of loss the Chargers are coming off of. I really wish the Chargers had won, and I wish it had been some like protracted, drawn-out, like overtime, emotionally draining division win on the road against the Chiefs. That would have been the ideal scenario for the Chargers to have coming into this game against the Bucks. But either way, you know, you don't get to choose what your opponent does the week before they play you, and they're coming off a tough loss instead. Herbert, even though the offense hasn't been explosive, and of course they have no receivers, Ladd McConkey's pretty much all they had, and he's been hurt. Herbert, for his part, has just one interception this year. One in 366 passes. That's a rate of 0.27%. Anything below 1% is extraordinary. So even if he had three times the number of interceptions that he does, or I shouldn't even say that, three times the percentage that he does, if he had three times more, then he'd be over 1%. But yeah, if he had three picks instead of one, three times the number of picks, four picks even, he'd still be under there. Insane. He doesn't turn it over. Now, it goes to show, and turnovers are bad, and you don't want them, and you have to take care of the football, but it's also not the end-all, be-all. If you're sticking the ball down the field, aggressively pushing the ball, you might have a few picks, but you're going to produce points. The Chargers offense hasn't produced, so you can pat yourself on the back all you want for not throwing picks. That's great, but if you don't actually do anything or produce anything or score, I'd rather have Bake out there slinging it, right? And you get a couple picks, and they're frustrating. Although he's been, you know, until recently, he was really good about it. Even so, overall, his rate's not that bad. But yeah, you take some of the good with the bad. The fumbles are worse, actually. Those happen in the backfield. But anyway, that's the story with the Chargers and their offense, and we'll see what the Bucks are able to do. As far as injuries go, right now, things still aren't great. Winfield, sprained knee, hasn't been seen at practice this week. He's going to be out. Winfield and Whitehead are still going to be out. So And Mike Edwards is probably out. He wasn't at practice today. I'm recording this on Thursday morning, late morning. And as of the Thursday morning practice report, Edwards wasn't out there and doesn't look like he's going to go. So you've still got Izzian, who even Izzian, I think, was taking it easy today, but I think he's okay. Izzian, Kayvon Merriweather, they'll have to go along with Jamel Dean and McCollum, who are going to be the corners. And, you know, depth, again, is pretty thin. Merriweather did a good job. Actually, he had 7 tackles on Sunday against the Raiders. That was his career high. And so he actually had the interception. Looked like another one. Anyway, let's hope he continues to step up because, again, first of all, hope that none of those 4 guys gets hurt. Tyke Smith, 5 guys. That's their 5. I mean, like I said, Izzian, Merriweather, Jamel Dean and McCollum at corner. You got Tyke Smith. Anybody gets hurt, we're into Josh Hayes territory. Nobody wants to be there, right? So that's the situation right now. Bucky Irving taking it easy, trying to get the back loosened up, something to keep an eye on. Sterling Shepard not there today, but I think he's okay. And then JTS back out there after missing the game. So the Bucks, aside from the secondary, seem pretty okay overall. Russell also may be a little bit tweaked. The Bucks did sign a linebacker, Deion Jones, to the practice squad as a little depth thing there because there's... But overall, the injuries aren't, like, atrocious outside of the secondary, which has been an ongoing thing. And it's actually something they asked Todd Bowles about, like, why do you guys keep tweaking hamstrings during the practice week before the games, and why do you keep having to deal with this? And he's like, he said, all I can tell you is that our practice schedule and our plan and everything we're doing is the same one we used last year. Like, they didn't mess with it. And last year they were very healthy. So maybe it's just a statistical anomaly, randomness, whatever you want to call it. Maybe there's something to it. Who knows? But they got to keep dealing with it. And, you know, at least this Chargers receiving core is not something that's going to press you hard downfield. They do use their tight ends pretty well. And that's been a little bit of a weakness for the Buccaneers. But hopefully nothing that they can't handle. Speaking of that addition of linebacker Deion Jones, does anybody remember? Because I didn't even remember. Like, it was just a guy's name when I read the thing, and then somebody on Twitter posted it. Deion Jones, the linebacker, previously with the Panthers and the Falcons, now on the Bucs practice squad this year. He is the guy who picked off the final pass that Jameis Winston ever threw for the Buccaneers in overtime of the last game of the season in 2019, returned it for a touchdown, beat the Bucs in overtime. You could make a credible argument that linebacker Deion Jones may have helped, if not be the specific reason the Buccaneers won a Super Bowl in 2020. Because if you remember, Arians, you know, patience was running thin with Jameis, and the picks were overwhelming. He had that 30 interception year. That was the 30th. And yet, I don't know if he doesn't throw that last pick 6 to lose that last game in overtime. It was the first play of overtime, too. Like, it was just like, oh my God, really? But if that doesn't happen, I wonder if Arians makes the move. Yeah, I wonder if the Bucs ever get Tom Brady, and obviously the rest is history after that, as they say. But linebacker Deion Jones made that play. It was his only interception that whole season. And if he doesn't, I'm not sure the Bucs get Tom Brady. I'm not sure Bruce Arians moves on. He still may have. Like I said, patience was running pretty thin. But what if Jameis, like, leads a touchdown drive on that final drive? And the game didn't matter. The Bucs could have won it, lost it. They weren't going to the playoffs either way. But perception, I think, was sealed, where it was like, okay, we can't do this anymore. We can't go on like this. I think that's what kind of clicked in Bruce Arians' head when that finally happened. And so, you know, maybe Deion Jones, maybe they should slip him a Super Bowl ring since he's here now, if they have any extra ones laying around the facility over there at One Buccaneer Place. Because, hey, man, you never know. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. Again, BobbyGameDay, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com as we get ready for this Week 15 with the Bucks at the Chargers. And one thing that I wanted to mention, it just stood out to me on all the different things coming across the news feed with the NFL. They're looking at making face masks one of the reviewable penalties. And this is a good thing, first of all. Second of all, like I always say, anything, I mean, even judgment call, I mean, they tried it with pass interference for a little bit, and those are more subjective. Holding, I get that maybe you can't have those be reviewable. But anything that has any clear-cut indicator, whether it's an objective, you know, ball hit the ground or not, foot in or out on the white stripe, whatever, those are obviously reviewable. But something like a face mask is another one where you can clearly see it on a replay. It's not really a judgment call. Should be reviewable. And it's as simple as having that sky rep. We don't have to have red flags. We don't have to have game delays. We don't have to have strategy come into this where a coach has to decide, is this worth a look or blah. Just have that sky ref, which they've been using pretty well this year, where somebody's watching the game upstairs or in the league office or wherever, whatever nerve center, anywhere you want to have some bunker somewhere, whatever, wherever it is. And they're watching the game. Because I always say, we're watching the game at home and we see all this stuff. If we can see it, the referee should be able to have access to it. Like, why do I know what happened 5 seconds after it happened, and yet we have these minutes-long delays? So that's what the sky ref is. He buzzes down, says, yo, man, face mask. Call face mask. And they're, okay, we go back. They did it a few times. They did it on one play that was illegal man downfield that the Bucs got called for, and the sky ref beeped in. Nobody even realized it, said, no, it's good. Play kept going. They ruled it good, and no delays, no nothing. You can do that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm in favor of getting as many calls right as possible, as seamlessly as possible, which we should have and do have the ability to do. And so if they end up reviewing this face mask thing, then at least they'll be able to get a few more things, especially the games. Those are game-changing penalties both ways. If a guy gets called for one and he didn't do it, or if a guy does one and he didn't get called for it, I am in favor, as you know, if you've ever heard me talk about these things, of trying to limit the number of game-changing penalties, especially when they don't have that much to do with the play. Like, I hate when there's, like, a big third down stop or a team forces a punt and then you get some ticky-tack roughing call. Completely changes the entire complexion. Now, instead of them punting, you get a first down. 15 yards is way too many. First of all, I think the biggest penalty should be 10 yards, not 15. Holding should be 5, and you should be able to review all these things. But if you are going to, I'll say this much. If you had this rule implemented already, face mask being reviewable, what would we be sitting here talking about right now? I'll tell you what, a prohibitive lead in the NFC South with the Bucs all but ready to clinch this weekend, because the Bucs would have won that Thursday night game in Atlanta if they hadn't missed an egregious face mask on a Bucky Irving carry up the middle that would have set them up with a fresh set of downs. Probably led them to run more clock, maybe even score a touchdown. But anyway, the whole thing, that fiasco at the end of the game in Atlanta on the Thursday night, never happens. Bucks have their split with the Falcons. This is assuming you leave everything else the same. You know, it's like the butterfly effect. If you change one thing in the past, then maybe everything else that happened after is also different. But they call a face mask in that game in Atlanta, or they go up to their sky ref, and he tells them, hey, throw that flag. Bucks win. Now they've got a 3-game lead instead of a 1-game lead, and they don't have to worry about the tiebreaker, and we're all but sitting here getting ready for a home playoff game. And it didn't happen, okay? So ifs and buts, right? But it'd be nice. It'd be nice. And so I say I'm all for anything that can help you get that type of stuff right. If this rule allows them to do that, then go for it. It's not going to be anything that happens this year, but it's just something they're looking at for down the road. And although, I need to go back and read the story more closely. They should be able to do that you don't have to wait to the offseason, or at least do it for the playoffs, something like that. I would implement it as soon as possible and at least get more calls right as soon as you can. But either way, Bucks Chargers 4:25 on Sunday as we roll into the holidays. We're getting there. The kids, depending on what school they go to, maybe this is their last week of school, maybe they got one more, whatever preparations you're trying to do and all that. It's a slow football weekend college-wise. All we have is Army-Navy. And none of the bowl games or playoff games start yet. I think it might be one bowl game Saturday night. But beyond that, nothing starts till next week. So we're leaning on the NFL more than ever. And then we'll start having the Saturday games, you know, after that. And just, you know, spread it around. Give me football. Put football on my TV as much as you can. I mean, these Tuesdays and Wednesdays, like this past week, I was like, oh, God, this is brutal. Like, Monday, you got Monday Night Football. Tonight, I'm doing this on Thursday. You may be listening to it on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But tonight, you got Thursday Night Football. Friday, there's nothing. Could have used something on Friday. Nothing. Saturday, nothing. Army-Navy, I'll watch that. And then Sunday and Monday, full swing. They could have put an NFL game Saturday night, in my opinion, this week. I wish they had done that. That would have been nice. But anyway, you know, again, I'll take it where I can get it. Just know, we're getting down to the end here, and pretty soon there ain't going to be no football on at all. And I love the other sports, but I it's not the same. And I'm not going to pretend watching the Lightning at Edmonton on a Tuesday night at 10:30 p.m. is as good as watching any football, especially when there's like 745 games left to go in the NHL season. That's what makes football football, folks. So soak up every last bit of it. More this weekend, and hopefully when I talk to you next week, we are talking about an 8-6 football team in firm command of the NFC South. But again, I caution you to expect a Falcons win on Monday night, and the Bucs, if they don't win this weekend, will find themselves in second place all over again. Let's hope that's not the case. Either way, thank you for listening. Thank you to the Joes, joebucksfan.com, the single best place anywhere, TV, internet, radio, for Buccaneer coverage. You don't need to go anywhere else, and it's a privilege to be featured on the site with this show. Thanks to them. Have a great, safe weekend. Have fun. Enjoy everything, and wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.